Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Researchers are discovering that when we talk, fight, flirt, or even exchange a moment's glance with our fellow humans, guess what? We physically shape one another's brains. This is important when considering the basic differences between men and women and its impact on their relationship. And Brad Coates talks about this and so much more in his book, Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to handbook and survivor's guide to the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues in its fourth edition. And Brad Coates, I am so happy to have you once more. You're my most frequent guest. Welcome to the program, Brad.
Hey, aloha from Hawaii, Diana, and all your listeners. It's always good to be back on, and we'll have a fun one today, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and Brad, yes, Brad practices law in Hawaii, and he's the founder of Coates and Fry, and it's their Hawaii's largest law firm, and this book has been very popular, and Divorce with Decency, and it helps a lot of people. And furthermore, you go on cruises, and you talk about human and romantic relationships and how you can keep a relationship together so that you don't have to face a divorce.
That's the theory. That's the theory. We've spent a lot of time trying to help people in and out of relationships, and including having them stay in. I do need to correct you. I don't run Hawaii's largest law firm. There's lots of big corporate law firms that are bigger than ours, but I do run the largest family, divorce and family law firm in Hawaii.
Okay, yes.
I wish I ran Hawaii's largest law firm, and I could have been retired a long time ago.
Yeah, but you don't want to retire, Brad.
No, I'd miss talking to you too much.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. But, no, I think too often people retire and then they kind of fold up their tents and they don't stay really engaged. So it's important to stay engaged in life for successful aging, right?
Across the board, no question.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting segue to what's our topic for today, which is the basic differences between men and women and its impact on their relationships. And one of the things that seems to be happening is that women are getting engaged earlier, getting more fully engaged, and staying engaged longer probably than a lot of men are. And that is changing the nature of relationships. I mean, it used to be that sort of in the Donna Reed days, the men ruled the roost and the women were the homemakers and the guy brought home the paycheck and the gal had to stay in the marriage because, you know, financially, if for no other reasons, whether she wanted to or not, because the guy brought home the paycheck. Now the women are bringing home paychecks that are as larger than the guys, and they're maturing faster, and they're moving further along in the up the socioeconomic ladder faster, and it's changed the nature of romantic relationships accordingly.
Well, absolutely, and you know, one of the there are many really superior aspects of your book because it is indeed a handbook about the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues. I mean, you really do cover all of these, and since you're in the fourth edition, you've updated it. And so we're going to look at in terms of basic biological differences, the mental differences, the values, and the communication, the physical, and of course this show is about love, lust, and laughter, and we get laughter from Brad because he's a very funny guy. But we will want to look at the sexual aspects of the biological differences too as we go along. So the biological differences, the mental differences, you say in your book, you talk about women multitasking, and it's true, women do, because we females have a bigger corpus callosum, the connecting tissue between the right and left hemispheres. And
That you do.
Yes,
you do. You got a leg up on us for sure. And it's, you know, and it's proven time and again that women have, you know, much more ability to mature faster and to you know, really across the board grow more rapidly, and sometimes they're leaving guys in their wake. You know, women have, as you mentioned, the corpus callosum, which connects the left and right brain hemispheres. You know, women have got 25% more corpus callosum. A lot of people haven't heard that term, but it is really what makes you spin back and forth faster between the right and left hemispheres of your brain.
Yeah.
And it makes for better multitasking. It makes for better communication skills. You know, women have much better, literally, biologically, in their very brains. They have specific areas for speech and language on both sides of their brain, whereas the men use primarily their left side of the brain, and it makes them more, guys are more single-minded, you know, task-oriented, you know, focused. You know, women can just, encapsulate a lot more material. They can deal with you know, more things happening faster in life. And guys kind of are one trick ponies a lot of times. Really one track ponies.
One track. You know, the way I summarize it is that, and I think it's from an evolutionary point of view, because if a woman is having sex and she has a baby, and the baby cries, she has to multitask. She has to be able to hear the baby cry. And
has to be able to cook while you got a baby on your waist. I mean, I never understood
true,
how.
And more multitasking.
I mean, it's totally amazing. It goes straight through the whole process, and mm-hmm. and women, you know, women just get a whole different send up out of the gates. I mean, I see it all the time in my divorce practice. The younger guys. You know, that maybe were the life of the party, the guy who, you know, was up and jumping up on the table with the lampshade on his head and, you know, bouncing around and doing beer bong hits and all, you know. And, you know, sometimes the girls like the bad boys and stuff in their early ages, and maybe they're athletic, maybe they've got, you know, a few other things going on. But, you know, the women start very rapidly to mature well beyond what guys do. Guys will keep playing out that aging frat boy role for, you know, well into their mid-30s sometimes. Late 30s. Sometimes I'm 64. Sometimes it goes to 64. I don't, you know, who knows how long guys will keep acting that way.
No, Brad, I know you. You know, the listening audience, maybe they've heard us before together, but we've been friends since 1999 when I first had you on my program. Your book was just published then, your first edition, Divorce
first one,
with Decency. Yeah. And so I've known you a lot of years, and you're a fun guy, but you know,
well,
you've
moved
way beyond frat boy, I would say. Because at times you do have to be responsible.
A lot of guys don't move beyond frat boy. Meanwhile, the women are going, wait a second, we just had this kid. Now I want a roof over the kid's head. Now I want some private school tuition. Now I need, you know, I mean, you know, it gets much seriouser faster for Wahinis than it does for guys. And the guys just keep bouncing around, and the gals outgrow them. That happens a lot of the time. And the other thing that we were just talking about was that because women have got so much more of a speech and linguistic focus, you know, they really... It starts from early stages. Girls start speaking earlier than boys as infants. A 3-year-old girl has twice the vocabulary of a 3-year-old boy. And it just goes and goes and goes with women developing faster. So that is, you know, a major issue. And because speech and communication and all this is so important to women, what do we hear as divorce lawyers as the primary cause of divorce? You know, he doesn't communicate.
That's
you know,
right.
Guys want to come home and, you know, watch sports on TV and sit in the Lazy Boy Lounger, and to them, that's a good marriage. But women, you know, women want more, oddly enough.
Oddly enough. So, yes, women do want more, and as you point out in your book, women who are stressed need to talk it out, and men who are stressed often need to, and we're generalizing a little bit, but men need to sit and relax.
Well, and they clam up. You know, John Gray, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. He calls it going to their cave when men start to go back to their caveman roots and just sort of, you know, just go sit and veg and sulk a little bit. And women, you know, can't we talk? I mean, the three most feared words by males and from coming from females, can't we talk?
I know.
So it is a different, there are different genders, as it turns out.
Yes. And you say, well, moving ahead to the communication thing, that in your practice, the biggest failing of their husbands and boyfriends is a reluctance to talk, particularly at the end of the day. I often suggest to help a couple's transition that they do a 15-second, a 7-second kiss and a 15-second hug. And that's enough of a hug and a kiss to get some oxytocin flowing. And even if they go their separate ways after they greet each other like this, the 7-second kiss, the 15-second hug, they have made that initial connection, which often makes a difference. And then
totally,
they can...
Totally.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I haven't gotten down to where I time my hugs and my kisses yet, but I mean, just basic stuff like, you know, getting off your butt and getting out of the lazy boy lounger and coming to greet your wife at the door when she comes home, and turning off the TV or at least hitting mute for a while. I mean, you know, basic stuff like that makes all the difference rather than just grunting as she walks in the door and going back to your TV. And you know, it starts, I mean, it's amazing. I've seen studies, and this is in my book, that talks about the number of communication signals, including vocal sounds and gestures, facial expressions, et cetera, body language. Women have like 20,000 communication words a day. Guys have got like 7,000. So you know, you're talking about like a third of the output of a woman's communication from a, you know, compared to a guy. So it's a major difference.
Sure it is, sure. And we need to keep that in mind when we talk about differences between men and women. Now, just backing up a little bit, because we were talking about the mental differences and then the different values between men and women, and then we go on to communication, but they're all intertwined. It seems as though, in terms of values, that men bond through common interests and activities like, I don't know, shooting hoops. And they're not talking. they're being active. That's how they bond. And,
this bites guys in the butt as they get to older age. I know, because I'm getting there. I mean, when you think about it, the way men define themselves from, like, you know, grade school on is first about their sports.
Yeah.
Then it's about their work and their career, basically external accomplishments. Women are much more internalized, and you know, women like, you know, like all kinds of other things along the way. And then when those basic linchpins of their self-worth drop away, a guy retires from his job, all of a sudden he's sitting there going, you know, now what do I do with my time? Or, you know, those basic male bonding things. You know, women have, you know, PTA and junior league and book clubs and sewing circles, and you know, it's amazing how many ways women stay to find to stay active and communicative with their peers, whereas guys, once you don't see your friends at the office anymore, that just drops away a lot of the time. You know, I mean, I've got a lot of guys that I jog with, for example, but you know, I wouldn't see them if we weren't going running. And like I say, women are just much better at that. It becomes a, you know, really a difference between focus on getting results, achieving goals, status, power, beating the competition, that kind of stuff, getting efficiently to the bottom line. Women define their self-worth by the quality of their relationships, and they like people more. They like to talk more. They, you know, it becomes you know, kind of a ongoing divergence between the genders, and guys, especially as they get older, they've got to realize that, and really stay much more proactive as far as their relationship. You know, that is the single biggest reason why women bail. You'll never see a guy come into a divorce lawyer's office and you know, you ask him why he wants a divorce. You know, it's almost always that he's been lured away by some other woman. If there's not another woman involved, you won't see a guy filing for divorce very often. And you'll never see a guy come in and say, and you say, what's wrong with your relationship? And you, well, we don't communicate enough. Are you kidding me?
I bet you don't hear that. No.
Yeah.
And even in...
But with women, that's, you know, that's it. Half the
that's
time.
That's it. And it affects how men and women argue, too, because back to the corpus callosum. Apparently, it's less active in men. And that may explain why men think that everything's fine until women start to
until
say otherwise.
Until they get divorce papers, yeah.
Or, yeah, even before that. So when you start to argue, the men may experience a fight or flight reaction that they have to stress. So I think sometimes the man has an impulse to tune the woman out. Do you see that?
Yeah. And that's mm-hmm. not smart, because 2/3 of all divorces, both in Hawaii and nationwide, are filed by women. I mean, it's the women. So you'd think it'd be about half-half. You'd think that each gender would be about equally upset about, you know, equal amounts of time.
Uh-huh.
But it's not. It's the women, and maybe they are equally upset, but it's women that actually act on it. So guys are sometimes really caught flat-footed about, you know, the fact that they're even, you know, that the issue is even being raised of a divorce, because they, you know, they thought they had the perfect marriage because, you know, nobody was complaining and I got fed regularly and I got to watch my sports on TV and what else was there? And women are going, wait a second, that's not even close, especially as they get older.
Part of the reason why men,
you know, following divorce, guys are in a big rush to get remarried, whereas mm-hmm. women are perfectly good as standalone. So mm-hmm. it's a interesting divergence, and it seems to get worse the older men get.
But I've also seen both in my personal life and looking at girlfriends, and then even more so in my seeing my clients in my clinical practice, that many women 50 plus. They filed for divorce, they've had it, but also then in the process, they don't necessarily look for another relationship. They fold up their tents, they're not sexual anymore, and sometimes menopause or perimenopause, you know, figures in, their hormones are a mess, and they're not getting hormone replacement therapy, and so they don't have a libido. And it's just, and then there's a kind of a loneliness, and they don't have anybody to grow old with, and that's too bad. Go ahead.
You know much more about the sexual aspect of this than I do, mm-hmm. being the sex goddess you are. But I can tell you, thank you very much.
There
we go. That's therapist/goddess. Definitely true is that in almost all situations, I mean, there's obviously exceptions, but sex continues to be more important to males than it is to females. While we're talking about the differences between the genders, you know, guys are, you know, almost always focused on sex for a lot longer than women are. They're more, you know, women, you know, are certainly they can, I've come across some pretty sexy women, and it, you know, but they do, you know, menopause changes that a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The sameness of it changes over time. The lubrication changes over time, and you know, guys, even if they need, you know, even if they really aren't in a position to do it all that much anymore or all that effectively anymore, you know, they still grab their Viagra and think they should. It's a funny thing. Guys are hardwired, I think, to be focused on sex, and women, you know, you'll find that a lot of times when I talk to you, I get a lot of I take a lot of grief from the guys because they think I'm sort of pro-wahini, but, you know, in this one instance, this is one area where women, if you don't think that sex is important to your marriage anymore, you might think again, because that is, it's a kind of a key issue for guys.
So, Brad, you're so used to living in Hawaii, and you've used the term wahini twice now.
Yes.
No, it's all right. We just need to explain to, because we have an international audience here, and wahini is woman in Hawaiian.
Yep.
And And Brad has lived in Hawaii most of his adult life, so he uses Wahine. And when I lived there, I used it occasionally, not a lot. But so anyway, I just wanted to translate for our international. That's all right. So there's another thing, because inside a man's head, the preoptic area of the hypothalamus, the part of the brain that makes men and women feel turned on, is 2.5 times bigger in guys and contains twice as many cells. So we got brain differences going on here, too. Furthermore,
I think that's true.
Yeah, furthermore, I love Lou Anne Brizendine's book, The Male Brain, and she preceded that book with The Female Brain, and then her colleagues teased her when she was going to write The Male Brain, and they said, oh, it's going to be a much slimmer volume. But no, that's not true. That's not true. She's a psychiatrist and a neurobiologist. Anyway, I think this is fascinating. She says that hormones seem to account for just about everything. Dr. Brizendine says this. And so she says if testosterone were beer, she estimates that a 9-year-old boy would get the equivalent of about a cup a day. By the time he turns 15, he's getting 2 gallons. And
is that right?
Yeah. So you go from a cup to, when you're a teenager, 2 gallons. And this sets in motion feelings of defiance and dominance and lust and invincibility and recklessness and even, guess what, detachment. So if a teenage boy, I don't know, he looks bored, he is bored. And that's because adolescent male brain's pleasure center is practically numb to any stimulus that isn't cranked up to the max. So victory and sex deliver a rush as addictive as cocaine for these teenage boys. So we have brain differences that are very prominent, right?
You may have just inadvertently explained the recruiting philosophy behind ISIS.
Oh my God! Yes, isn't that
all these young boys? Yep. Sounds like fun to me. We'll go rape and behead women.
Oh.
And bizarre. Oh. Rape women and behead, you know, Christians or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's sex and violence and victory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sex and violence and victory. That's right. It's shocking, really. It's really shocking.
Maybe we should send you over there as a roving goodwill ambassador.
Oh yeah,
Baghdad,
no, thank you. I'm in a stage in my life where I'm happy to be here and in Seattle and see lots of clients and help them with their marital therapy. I don't want to go to there. I mean, I would like to bring peace, but that's a monumental task, and I am not grandiose. Well, maybe about my sexual goddessness, but
it does not bode well for women, what's going on over there, I'll tell you that.
No, it certainly doesn't.
But, you know, hormones aside, there's a lot of other factors that are changing the dynamics of men versus women in our own society.
Yes, so let's go back to that and your book, because you describe a lot of this really well.
Well, in 1970, you know, women were the main breadwinner of about 7% of all U.S. households. Now it's like 25%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the most recent recession, 3/4 of the jobs that were lost by men. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, women's earnings have been growing 44% from 1970 to 2007, compared to just 6% for men. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
This the she economy, don't you?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And then, so you've got women that, you know, used to have to, I mean, for a long time, marriages were held together by need. I mean, the woman, whether she loved the guy or not, she needed to stay married to him because she didn't have a whole lot of other alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you got a husband and wife, both of whom are working, you know, 40% of the time, the wife out-earns the husband nowadays. So you don't mm-hmm. think that changes the dynamics of a relationship. You'd be crazy, because that's really changed. Women have so many more choices nowadays, it's unbelievable. And it's happened very, very rapidly.
And when anybody, male or female, but in this case we're talking about females, they have more choices, it can complicate things more. Because women are typically trying to juggle so many balls in the air if they have children and they have a husband and they have a job. And that's why Sheryl Sandberg has really come up with, I think, a great term, lean in, for women. And
yeah, my wife uses that on me all the time.
Does she?
I'm getting
well,
leaned in on
I know
all
your
the
wife.
Time. Yeah.
I know your wife, and she is a lovely, intelligent woman, and she makes a lot of money.
Far more than I do. So that's a classic example of, you know, and there's a columnist named Maureen Dowd who writes a lot of interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's
mm-hmm.
talked about this sort of surprising contradiction mm-hmm. that has happened, where the feminist revolution, in some ways, has wound up benefiting men more than women. She says, you know, women begin their lives more fulfilled than men, but as they age, they gradually become less happy. Men, in contrast, get happier as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
When women stepped into male-dominated realms, they put more demands and more stress on themselves. So women have now got more choices, but choice is inherently stressful. And a lot of the stuff that, you know, certainly there was, you know, my mother, when my dad died, I had to teach her how to write a check. She'd never written a check in her life. And you know, all that was, you know, the male domain. So now she's certainly much more diverse. But you know, then you got to write checks, you got to pay bills, checks bounce. I mean, the next thing you know, all the stress that goes with it can come along behind it. So women have got themselves in a situation where they're continue to be expected to do most of the heavy lifting for childcare, most of the heavy lifting for chores around the house. And now they're expected to be equal participants in the business and world of business and commerce. Some question as to, you know, whether they may not have gotten a raw deal out of this whole thing.
Mm. Well, a lot of women are just totally stressed, and that can. When I was before I moved to Seattle, oh my goodness, it's been 6 years plus now. I was at, as you know, Brad, I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, and then I've discovered it since I've been here too. Even young women, meaning women, say in their early 30s, they get their blood tested, and we find, lo and behold, that they're low in testosterone. And testosterone levels, even in young women, can go down if they have chronic stress. So they're trying to balance all of this stuff: a husband, young children, a job, a demanding job. And so given if their testosterone levels are low, then replacing testosterone can make a big difference, because testosterone not only makes the libido better, but it gives one energy and also a sense of well-being. So testosterone's pretty amazing, but it is doctor prescribed, and you need to have the blood test first. You can't just run out and get it. It's not like candy.
Another interesting factor that I'm sure you're aware of is that as they get older, women start to develop more testosterone, and their testosterone levels rise, and men start to decline. It's almost like the genders switch around a little bit later on in life. But you're exactly right. The transition is not fun. I mean, people aren't used to that. Trying to replace hormones.
Some women
deal with new hormones.
Yeah, but some women, as they're postmenopausal, do develop a little, or they have access to a little more androgen because their estrogen has gone down. But not all women. Some women are really deficient in testosterone, so they need replacement. And I'm an example. I've been on testosterone replacement for 15 years at least, maybe around there. And I'm in good shape, and I'm healthy and have a robust libido. So I'm a believer in testosterone, but the woman needs to get a blood test. She needs to see where her levels are. and if she's had breast cancer in her family, it may not work for her. This is a very much of an individual decision that she and her doctor need to make in terms of if she's a candidate for testosterone replacement.
Yeah.
Or even bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, bioidentical hormone, BHT, there we go, BHT. So if she's a candidate for it, it needs to be determined. And anyway.
Well, it's been pretty well established that you know, somewhere in the range of, you know, two-thirds of all men, but only about one-third of all women say sexual activity is important to their lives. So, it, you know, I think probably it's a good idea to try and keep the level of sexuality, and that may involve, you know, hormone levels, and keep them strong, because, that's one of the things that can really be a glue that binds relationships together if it's done right.
Absolutely. And you say in your book, I'm looking at page 71, sexual sensibilities for the female gender, some 60% of men, but only 35% of women say sexual activity is important to their lives. That's a big difference. And
yeah.
Then this is amazing to me, 56% of women surveyed said that their pet is more affectionate than their partner. And 45% said that their pet is cuter than their partner. Oh, my goodness. That is sort of depressing, in my view.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would be depressing if you were the guy who was losing out to your French poodle.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, dear. Yeah. And but it does indicate that there needs to be lots more affection between couples. Lots more demonstrative feeling, more verbal compliments, the man to the woman, and back the woman to the man, too.
Yeah.
Although, in general, women are a little more auditory, and men are a little more visual. I think you bring that out in your book, too. So the woman is saying, in effect, make love to me in my ear. Tell me some nice things.
Whereas the guy is ready to marry a gal just because she's got big breasts. So, you know, I mean, sometimes the fact that men are so visual is maybe blinds them to other qualities.
I think
it's probably smarter to go for brains rather than breasts, but, you know, that's not the first thing that guys check out.
Here's a question for you, Brad. And I don't know if you want to do this on the air, but the question
yeah.
is, what advice would you give your younger self about relationships and sexuality? You.
That's interesting. You know, I think, you know, I look back on my life, and certainly I was, you know, a bit of a hound dog in my earlier years, and it may have slowed down my appreciation of other qualities in women. I've got a woman now, a wonderful wife who I just love for all kinds of, you know, intellectual reasons. I mean, you know, it's nice to be able to discuss you know, geopolitics and movies and plays and existential literature and all kind of, you know, I mean, that all winds up being every bit as important as orgasms, I think, at some point.
Yeah. Well, in fact, you spend more time in conversation in your life with your mate than you do in bed, so.
Yeah, and I think that's something that guys are slow to catch on. And who knows? I mean, it's, you know, there's a whole new generation of genesis of relationships now. I mean, it used to be that, you know, you met people and you know, you actually did talk to them before you had sex, and you actually did get to know them, and maybe your family's even introduced you, or maybe you'd carried your books home from school before you ever finally got her into bed or whatever. But there was at least a little bit of sounding out each other and some, you know, some non-sexual foreplay before you had the sexual foreplay. And now there's a real kind of a weird switch with you know, people mating so fast. I think the internet has made mating and hooking up, you know, so instantaneous that it's you know, kind of bizarre how this focus on the physicals, it seems to have extended even later into life than, you know, usually you kind of outgrow it, I think, at some point, at least outgrow the part of being, you know, being consumed by it. But, you know, I probably spent a little too much time chasing women just because they were pretty instead of because they had other qualities. And now I see that going on all the time, both guys and women. They've got these bizarre, hookup sites. I don't know if you've heard of Tinder and some of those where,
yes,
you know,
you
literally,
have.
You know, you just instantly find somebody that's within 200 yards of you and go have sex. I mean, it's just, you know.
It's a new world out there, Brad.
Yeah,
it's a new world.
I think I preferred the old one myself, but, you know.
I think so, too, because so often the hookups, well, I'm sure there's immediate pleasure, but in terms of any kind of emotional satisfaction, I'm not sure there's that for most of the hookups, anyway.
But it's definitely going to change the nature of relationships because, you know, in the past, you know, there was always at least an element of, oh my God, if I lose him or if I lose her, you know, am I ever going to find somebody like, you know, like them, or will mm-hmm. I ever find anybody again, period, or whatever? And, you know, I'm sure that held a lot of relationships together. And now that you can find a new relationship in 10 minutes as soon as you swipe your phone, holy cow, that's a game changer.
It is, and I think, I suspect that a lot of the young people involved in this ultimately will be the losers for it, because they may not find, with this sort of immediate hookup, the deeper, you know, okay, so here's the triangular theory of love, and this was developed by a guy named Sternberg back in Yale in 85, so it's a while ago. The triangular theory of love. So imagine a triangle. So on the left side of the triangle, you've got commitment. That's the cognitive part. You decide to commit. You're happy to commit. Maybe it's marriage. Maybe it's getting engaged, whatever. But you are committed. You are a couple. Then on the right side of the triangle, you have intimacy. And that is the emotional part of love, where you can be vulnerable, you can be silly, you can trust each other, you can tell each other your secrets, all of that, the emotional side of love. But at the foundation of the triangle, the bottom line of the triangle, is passion. And that is the motivational part of love. And if you don't have that, your relationship is not likely to be sustaining, because to have commitment, intimacy, and passion is what you really need for consummate love, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, how much relationships are going to be able to be sustained. I mean, you know, fewer and fewer people are entering into them. I mean, in relationships, of course. I mean, that covers a lot of ground. I mean, people are certainly entering into one-night stands pretty fast,
mm-hmm.
but, you know,
mm-hmm.
far fewer people are actually getting married nowadays than ever did before, and they're waiting far longer to do it. They're getting married at much older ages than they had been. So the idea behind people getting married, having the commitment angle of things the way you were talking about is that seems to be slowing down. And I think now that people have so many more options,
yes.
You know, I think you can expect the marriage rate is going to continue to plummet. I mean, in the 2010 census, for the first time in American history, there were more unmarried American adults than there were married American adults. That had never happened. I mean, it used to be that 80% of everybody was married, and now it's down to about 48% married and about 52% unmarried. And as the options expand exponentially, I think you can anticipate that trend to continue. And then you've got to try and look, you know, deeper in as to what that does to, you know, broken homes and, you know, no nuclear family and no, and maybe not a good sounding board for the rearing of children and, you know, single family parents raising kids on the fly rather than having an old style sit down and, you know, have meat and potatoes dinner and you have the whole families together at the dinner table. I mean, that almost never happens anymore. So it's going to be a changing aspect of society that is going to be interesting to watch.
It's if one allowed oneself, it could be very depressing. And I do hear this from my clients. Just yesterday, Monday, I was talking with a young couple, and they, at their family dinners, both the mother and the father have their phones out. The father is playing games. The mother is doing a word thing. And the children are, and you know, they're like 7 and 11, something like that. And they're, you know, they're not engaged with the parents either. Contrast this to what I had. I had a very beautiful upbringing, and it was happy and so on. But I can remember mother who was a stay-at-home mother would say, okay, your father's had a long day at work. Now, I don't want you girls, my sister and me, I don't want you girls fighting at all. And we're going to have a nice dinner, and we did, and it was candlelit. And if we didn't have good manners at the table, we were punished, you know, slightly, or corrected anyway. But the main thing was we had family communication. What was the best part of your day? What was the worst part of your day? What are you grateful for? Some of these kinds of questions about that help families pull together. And it's over a family meal. But if everyone's plugged into a phone or something else, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's interesting. There was an article in today's Honolulu Advertiser entitled "America is Rotting from Within." Mm. And it talks about the fact that ever since the beginning of radio, TV, mass media, that, you know, basically, instead of focusing on the important things in life, which we used to, like you said, you know, the family dinners, et cetera, you know, now it's all about far less consequential stuff, the private lives of actors and singers and, you know, athletes and heirs and heiresses and Kardashians and the millionaires and disgraced public officials and, you know, everybody's blogging and, you know, doing silly sitcoms and reality shows. And, you know, that basically this guy's theory was that, you know, when you start focusing on your lower nature instead of the higher things, you know, you become a failed nation, essentially, and can collapse under your own weight if you're not careful. And we are headed towards the banal and bizarre rather than the more important things in life. And that is, everything's become transient. Everything's become, you know, like I say, you just zip in and out of marriages, in and out of relationships. Go on Tinder and, you know, find somebody for one night, you know, or half a night, you know, that's, you know, 200 yards away. It's kind of a bizarre turn of events, really.
Well, whoever wrote that article in today's Honolulu Advertiser, I don't know if he mentioned the culture of narcissism, because that is at the foundation, in my opinion, that more
You're
and
exactly
more...
You're right. That should be.
Right.
Yeah.
The culture of narcissism. More and more people are feeling entitled. It's all about them. They lack empathy, compassion, and it does not bode well for relationships. And if you watch and listen to the reality shows, oh my goodness, the narcissism is just astounding.
Yeah. You'd think that was all that mattered. So, you know, that then translates into a situation where you get, people not bothering to complete schooling because, you know, I don't need to. I'm going to, you know, win American Idol. Or I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to get, you know, six figures from, you know, being a professional athlete or, you know, disc jockey or whatever. I mean, you know, then the, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch it play out. I mean, you don't want to get too grumpy in your old age, but it does. It is a major shift in society.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we, I walked out on the street today in front of my building, and there were some window washers, and one was saying to the other, it was actually, it made me smile. He said, "Listen to this." He said, "You never get out of life. You're going to die, so why not find the joy?" And I thought, good for these window washers.
Find philosophical window washing. I like that.
I do, too. I really do. And I wanted to mention another thing, just to go back to brains, because you've got the mental part in your basic biological differences. And I came across this fact that I find fascinating, and I suspect you will too, Brad, and hopefully our listeners will. So the eyes contain nerves that lead directly to a part of the brain that triggers empathy. And this is the orbitofrontal cortex, or OFC. And when lovers' eyes meet, the OFCs loop them together, interlinking their brains and stimulating nerve cells that allow us to intuit each other's emotional states. The OFC also links with nearby brain regions rich in other specialized cells called mirror neurons. Have you heard of mirror neurons?
I have now.
Okay, so mirror neurons
are, that you can literally see it right in each other's eyes.
Right, mirror neurons they reflect back an action we observe, and they make us mimic that action or have an impulse to do so. So mirror neurons make emotions contagious, letting the feelings we witness flow through us. Another reason for experiencing joy, right? and influencing each other.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. I mean, well, you know, they always say that that's one of the quickest ways to you know, try and tell whether there's any chance that, you know, whether it's in a singles bar or wherever else. If, you know, it's eye contact, it's one of the first indicators as to whether there's anything going to happen.
That's right. And this morning on CBS This Morning, you know, the news show, they had an author on, and she's written a book, Heidi something, I didn't quite get the whole name. She's written a book about how we can understand each other better. And so she gave a very interesting example of a CEO of a company, because he knew he had to have a good listening face, but apparently his listening face showed anger. And so finally, one of his top executives brought this up. "Well, you always look angry." He said, "Oh, well, I'm listening to you," but he looked angry. I think it's important that, yeah, we need to have a listening face, which shows compassionate eyes, empathic eyes, but we don't want to look angry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and probably a woman would be quicker to recognize that than a guy would, because, again, they got more communication gestures.
Yes, and so you want to nod and have a good active listening face. And it's just women, you know, from an evolutionary point of view, too, we've got a little bit more going for us on that side of... But I do think it's important for everyone to nourish our connections, because our very sense of fulfillment and satisfaction in life depends on how rich our relationships are. Isn't that the truth, Brad?
Well, I mean, you know, that seems to be pretty well established, is that one of the things that's more important than almost anything else as you age is the amount of social connections you've got and the quality of the social connections you've got.
Yeah.
And again, that's another difference between men and women. You know, women have large numbers of very, very close friends, larger numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men, you know, it's usually two or three, four or five, maybe, if they're lucky. Women, it can be, you know, a dozen. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's. I think that's, you know, another thing that makes women sometimes do better as they get older compared to guys. Mm-hmm. And it's why guys, when they older guys, they if they get divorced, they run back to them to get remarried inside of, you know, a couple of years. Whereas yeah. women, you know, women will oftentimes stay single and deliberately stay single.
Yeah, I've heard women say, I don't want to be a nurse with a purse. Meaning, I don't want to marry some old guy just because I have some money and I can. So that's the purse part, and then he needs a nurse. And some of these women are widows, and they've nursed a husband of maybe 40, 50 years through an illness, and they don't want to do that again. So that's another reason for some of the older women who are resistant.
Well, there have been a lot of studies that show that men are much more vulnerable than women to mental illness and other self-destructive physical diseases if you know following a divorce. Men seem to take divorce much harder than women do. Divorced men have higher rates of mental illness and of suicide than women do. Men are less apt to seek counseling too. That's another. I mean, you know, speaking
that's
as a counselor,
thing, right.
You know, that's you know one of the things that can really get your head back on straight is to seek counseling. But I find in my divorce cases that, you know, women are like 10 times as likely, and that's no exaggeration, 10 times as likely to suggest marriage counseling as guys are.
10 times more.
Yeah, I mean it's staggering. Yeah. They just you know guys. I don't need that. You know, again, it's, you know, it's like they'd have to bear too much of themselves and open up, and it's just, it's counterintuitive for the way guys behave. It's, you know, a man's whole essence sometimes is all about, you know, being stoic and clammed up and, you know, we're not going to talk about it and, you know, whatever. And then the women finally get exasperated and leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's pretty constant.
Pretty constant. And you know, there is something called emotional contagion. Have you heard of this? And that's catching someone else's mood, whether it's joy or despair. Now, these are people that tend to have pretty high EQ, emotional intelligence. And then there's IQ, of course. But emotional contagion. So, you know, if you're in a relationship with somebody who's happy and joyful, that's going to bode well for the relationship.
No question.
If somebody
surrounding yourself with positive people is makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and even in the workplace, you know, a gloomy Gus comes into a meeting with a visibly bad mood and drags everybody down. That happens too, but we're not in this conversation. At least we're not talking so much about workplace, but about human relationships. I want to go back and just encourage people to get your book. It's in its 4th edition. I mean, Brad Coates, he's rewritten this. He's brought it up to date. I'm pleased because he's quoted me in several instances too. So. But you've quoted a lot of really good people in their books and so on. So
I tried to make it a compendium. I mean, it's called Divorce with Decency, but it's actually far more than just a divorce book. You know, one of the quotes on the cover of it that I got from one of the chief judges of the family court here in Hawaii, he refers to it, it's an all-encompassing survey of love, marriage, and romantic relations in modern life. And that really is true. I mean, I tried to get as much into here as I could from all different angles as to, you know, the psychology, the demographics, sociiology, the economics, the whole thing has really become a fascinating topic to me. And, you know, I've been doing divorce law for 37 years now. So, you know, it was interesting to add in the element of trying to figure out why these people are doing what they're doing in addition to just, you know, chopping and, you know, dividing everything they've got in half. I'd done that for a long time, and then it finally became time to try and figure it out and be more useful to people along the way.
You know, and that's what makes you, well, there are many things that make you exceptional as a human being, Brad, because I've known you. You're my friend. But also exceptional as a divorce attorney, because most divorce attorneys, well, I'm generalizing a little bit, but they're content to take on a case and and then the case becomes adversarial to the other divorcing person, and then they make more money. But you're different. First of all, you
yeah,
try
I make
to,
less money.
You make less. Well, you make less money, but look what you do. Talk about what you do, and then, of course, that's an extension to what you do when you lecture on cruise ships. But talk about what you do in terms
well,
of...
Well, you know, yeah. I don't know if how interested your listeners are in the legal profession, but one thing you've got to be very, very careful of in the law biz is letting lawyers, you know, start to run away with your life and your case, you know, on based upon their time and their direction, rather than directing it yourself. You know, their lawyers make more, they all charge by the hour and they make more money the longer they can, you know, stretch things out.
Exactly.
And, you know, you need to cut through that crap, as the client. And oftentimes it's, you know, a lot of it's in Latin or weird, you know, weird language that you're not, lawyer language that you're not used to hearing. And, you know, they can fool you into thinking you've got to do it this way or that way. But, you know, always stay, you've got to take charge of your own legal case, just like you got to take charge of your own life. And it's absolutely crucial to pursue avenues like mediation or negotiation or trying, you know, and, you know, cut out a lot of the extraneous legal steps of discovery this and deposition that and produce these documents. And, you know, you can just get stuck to the tar baby doing all that legalistic kind of stuff. And you're much better off trying to focus, especially in divorce and family law cases, which affect individuals and the children and, you know, your heart and your sleepless nights and your stomach lining. And, you know, you got to get these things resolved as fast and as efficiently as you can. And don't let the lawyers run away with it. That would be my advice.
And it's very, very good advice. And I can tell our listeners, because Brad is my friend, he is such a good human being. And he's so bright and so funny. And, you know, Brad, you have a good moral compass.
Well, I've tried, you know, I mean, we run a big divorce firm here. I've got like 11 attorneys working for me while I'm slapping to you on the radio. Hopefully they're making some money. but the... But, you know, we're all instructed, you know, I founded the firm and I instruct everybody to try and get to the most rapid and economical and fair resolution you can. You know, most of divorce lawyering is, you know, dividing assets in half. I mean, you don't got to be a genius to do that. Most people can divide by two. It's, you know, the trick is sorting through the emotions and trying to get people back on the right track and help them recover as they come out of it and, you know, and being smart as they go through it rather than vindictive or rather than, you know, overly emotional. You know, it's a lot of this is, you know, human relations as much as it is law.
Well, of course, and I have always said that divorce is like a death. It's a death of hopes and expectations, so it has to be grieved. It has to be dealt with. But as you have said, and I've quoted you many times, keep your eyes open and learn and improve. Learn and improve. Well, you know, whether you're going through a divorce or whatever hard time it is.
From every phase of life, you just try and learn from it. No question.
Learn from it. So, Brad, we're going to have you back. No question about that. So the best way to get your book is either go ahead and tell.
Mm-hmm. If you can find a bookstore, more bookstores have got it. It's a nationwide release. Again, the title is Divorce with Decency, the Complete How-To Handbook and Survivor's Guide to the Legal, Emotional, Economic, and Social Issues. And my name is Bradley A. Coates, Coates. So hopefully people will find it useful.
And I'll put it in the summary of the show today. Thank you, Bradley. It's just
always
so good
to
have you,
Diana,
back on the show. And next week I'll have Dr. Dudley Danoff back for, I think, the fourth time. And he's a urologist and the author of Penis Power. So tune in.